Village, serving local burgers, gyros, and falafel. Also, Summer's Organic Shave Ice with fresh fruit. Open Sunday through Friday, 10:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. 783-0230 for takeout. Chef Georgia DeJungle supports KKCR.
KKCR listens to you. If you'd like to make comments or provide feedback regarding our programming, or to suggest programming you'd like to hear, go to kkcr.org, click on the contact link, and take our listener survey. Or send us a letter at KKCR, P.O. Box 825, Hanalei, Hawaii, 96714. Kauai Community Radio, listening to you.
Mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio, the station that loves you, and we are really working hard on keeping everybody up to date and full of information, knowing how to work with things. We cut our fun drive is coming up next week. The next 2 weeks we're going to have our fun drive, and so that's an important time for us, and people can actually be an early bird donor, and then it makes it all that much easier for us when we're doing it. We got some real interesting shows that are going to be happening during it, though. And I happen one of my guests that's in here today, Annie Brook. She's somebody who actually does a lot of stuff from the nonprofit world. Say hi, Annie. Let me see if you're in
there.
Hey,
Felicia.
Hi.
Happy to be here.
So, great. And then I also have Preeta in here.
Hi.
Hi.
Happy to be back.
Yay. And she's been a programmer before. She was a rock star. And we have Marshall. Marshall's answering the phones at 826-7771. So today we're going to be having a lot of different discussions. We're going to start with Preeta on a little bit about empowerment and music, but in general, this show is going to look at some specific examples, but really on how we work together, how we get different organizations to work together, because I think what we all want and hope for is empowerment and freedom and not being limited by too many rules. A lot of times on this particular show, we look at the rules and regulations that are coming up and how to make sure that they work for us instead of keep us a little bit struggling. So today we're going to be talking a little bit about what's going on here on Kauai and all these different collaborating organizations that's making things work well together. We have an extra emphasis on agriculture, because that's really the foundation, is food and housing, and I would say water and energy, and in just about any, you know, application. And in our energy situation, we're a lot better off than some of our other islands, where we have a lot of renewals that are coming up, renewables, and we have a cooperative, so we are a few steps ahead of the game. And we're going to be looking at different great trips that people have gone on and projects and things that are underway. And then later on, we're going to talk a bit about some of the marijuana dispensary elements that, and I listened to Jimmy's show, The Out of the Box, on last Thursday, and I learned a lot on that. We try and bounce off of each other, and there was a few things that concerned me that I heard on that. And what is really good, though, I listened to it again. You can always go to kkcr.org and go to audio archives and listen to it a second time. And so the first time when I'm listening to it quickly, I'm thinking, okay, it's all set in stone, that the plan as is had some things that were seemed concerning in terms of freedoms for people. I listened to it again, and Representative D. Morikawa was on, And I could hear that, nope, it's not all set in stone, that there is room to be making a difference. And that's like one of the services that Kauai Community Radio is part of, what people invest in when they support the station, is being able to have these dialogues that are out there.
Yes. Crucial.
Crucial. So we're going to talk about that. I also brought in, I noticed that there is a $1,500 page ad in the Garden Island right here when it says, Native Hawaiians, our future, your vote. As we get a little bit further in the show, I will talk a little bit about this newly named Na'i Aupuni, which is a whole nother, got all these names that I have to learn how to pronounce, about what's going on relative to self-determination and reorganizing a government. And you might think, okay, I'm not Hawaiian, maybe it doesn't apply to me, but really it applies to all of us because they are our hosts. This is our host culture, and when we treat everybody fairly in Pono, we have a much, much better future for Hawaii Nei. And so there are some important deadlines that I was going to.
Who, Felicia, who can vote in that election?
You have to be part Hawaiian, mm-hmm. with Native blood.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then we'll go into it a little bit more, but you have to sign up. They have a deadline of October 15th, and we'll go a little bit more detailed into it a little bit later, but. What does happen with this, and this is like kind of what I'm looking at, is like, okay, building freedom, like divide and conquer. This is a little bit of a frightening topic for people because it's framed in a way, best I can read it, is like, if you don't sign up, you get excluded from a whole lot of opportunities, but not only you, but your descendants.
Really?
So, as we get a little bit further into it, if there's an Akamai listener that's able to bring a little extra clarity, but I've done a lot of reading on it, and you know, there's the UH law professors and a lot that's there, that it sounds like it's just another version of the Roll Commission, or it's a nation within a nation. It's defining indigenous Hawaiian people as more like a Native American Indian tribe. Mm-hmm. And at one level, that might sound good, and at another level, like having grown up in the area where there's a lot of, it doesn't really work out that well for everybody. I mean, there's benefits that they have that Native Hawaiians don't have, but
I can't think of an example where that is working well for Native Americans, you know?
To have, they've had their reservations. I mean, they have, at least they have a reservation.
Well, okay.
I mean, you know, they have, like, the Navajo Reservation is bigger than a number of East Coast states.
Yeah, but what's the poverty level there?
Well, one has to decide that you're bought into our economy, but very low. Although, like, the reservations and the people groups that are doing better, well, they're participating in our dominant culture, either doing things like
Casinos.
Right. You could do casinos or, you know, oil extraction. You get, people call it Eskimo pay. Like they, you know, they actually get money. Even if you don't live on the reservation, you get money for having the bloodline because you're like a shareholder in whatever's giving that out. So this is an example of something that we'll delve into a little bit more deeply later on in the show. And even I want to be looking at a national level, that there's a lot of things going on when we look at different of these presidential campaigns, or I've been probably paying the most attention to Bernie Sanders, and he says a lot of things that are really good. You know, I was like, hey, yeah, you know, we want to have free college, it'd be great, you know, it'd be nice to have free preschool for people who want to put their kids in school. But you know, then you go, okay, well, what's on the fine print? And it might not be what he would envision in the fine print, but that's what we see as things go through this tube of becoming a public process, that what might sound like a really good idea on the front end oftentimes is corrupted into a way that is not that manageable or not that desirable by the time it's finished being massaged. So I think that, like, for me, a theme that I'm hoping that we're able to really be able to realize as or discuss as we're going through this is being able to work together is very valuable in not being an all or nothing. It has to be all this way or I'm not going with that, because then it puts you in this leveraged point that if you become a single issue person, a lot of times there's a backdoor on issues that you weren't anticipating. And Preeta, I'm looking at you. You grew up here, right?
I did.
And when did you know you were a musician?
My whole life.
Your whole life. Were you in diapers and playing the ook or something?
Yeah, I came out playing a guitar.
There you go.
My parents were very, innovative.
That had to be a scene.
No, I started piano when I was 7 and guitar when I was 13, but I've been taking voice and songwriting. Just part of my makeup.
And you grew up here, and then I know that you were part of KKCR. You had your own show. What was it called again?
Eclectic Afternoon.
Eclectic Afternoon, and that's when you were 20-ish?
I think I was, 18 to 20, something
okay.
like that.
So that was a music show.
Yeah.
But then you went off to the big city and were recording music and stuff over there?
Yep, I was in L.A. for 10 years.
And you had a pretty good gig going on over there, is that correct?
Yeah.
And how much music have you put out? How much songs have you done? Or
I have 2 full-length albums and a few singles and an EP. So.
Okay, and then you came home. How come?
Kauai called me home.
It's been, what,
as it does.
3 years now, maybe?
I think I've been back 5 or 6 years.
5 or 6, okay. And I know that, like the rest of us, you're probably not making that much money here versus there, and particularly because I see you playing for so many benefits. You're always helping people.
Well, I love being a support of good things on this planet. That's part of why I'm doing music, because I feel like it's a frequency that comes through, and it's here to uplift people. So, and I'm getting called to the mainland, so I'm going next week.
And so are you moving there?
I'm not sure yet. I'm going to just be doing some shows and see what unfolds.
And so this Thursday, you have a little CD release party, or is it a video release party?
It's the woman music video release concert that you star in.
Yes, I was honored to be one of very many people that were on the song, right, in the video. You did sort of a piece where it's an eclectic mosaic of people singing, right?
Yes, that, and we had YWCA contribute, and a few other organizations, SEEDS, which is a belly dancing women's empowerment organization. So we have probably 130 to 50 different women in the video. So it's going to be released October 1st, this Thursday, and we're showing it at the General Store of Hanalei.
Which is like the old Ching Yung store.
Exactly. From 7:30 to 9:30 on Thursday, and I'll also be doing a concert. So it's just very exciting to have everyone, a lot of women of Kauai participating in the movement. And I wish I could have put everybody on the video, because there's so many amazing women on this island who are very powerful. So, yeah.
Well, so what inspired you to focus on women? What caused you to write this song? What brought your attention and mindset to specifically empowering women? I know that you're a woman, but there's probably more reason than that.
My whole life I felt a huge, strong call to women's empowerment, women waking up. Women give birth. We are the nurturers and the loving support for humanity. And I think for me, it was a personal process of learning how to heal myself from, health issues, life, relationship problems, everything you could think of. So I wrote it actually about 10 years ago when I was living in LA, getting out of a bad relationship. So I basically channeled it, and it was written for me at that time to help me get through it. And then I started women's empowerment classes that I've been teaching for the last 6 years. And it's a huge passion of mine. So, yeah.
So if you were giving a tip or two to somebody who was feeling in a low moment, what would you be trying to tell somebody to help them feel empowered if you give a class? Like what? And my guess is that it probably would also empower men. It's like,
oh, yeah.
It's not really that we don't love men. It's no. That this is directed at women. But what would be an example of a couple key things that somebody might walk away with from taking an empowerment class?
Just remember that you're perfect, just the way you are. I mean, there's all these layers that we can work on, but we're all perfect innately, divinely perfect. And the more that we be that and shine that to the world, the more that the world responds to that, and relationships get better, health gets better, the planet gets better, families get better. So I think the more that we love ourselves and honor ourselves, the more that is reflected in our environment.
And the inverse of that would be if you didn't feel good about yourself, you were self-conscious, you felt awkward,
insecure,
or not pretty or not capable of doing your job, you're putting out a signal that is maybe causing rejection.
Right.
And we could up that even at a cultural level.
Right.
Right. Sometimes we'll have demoralized communities or cultures, different things like that. And so we all have to start where we're at, value where we're going and what we would be moving to.
Yeah. And I'm thinking back just as you're talking right now. When I was about 8 to 10 years old, I read an article about female genitalia mutilation.
Right.
And that was such a shocker to me at such a young age that it just ignited a flame, and I was just like, wow, this has to change. So we need a voice.
And at some level, we do that in America, to boys. Right?
I totally agree.
So yeah. I know that when I first became aware of that with a lot of shock of what we do to baby girls, it caused me to go, huh, what do we do to baby boys?
Yeah.
So my sons have benefited from the fact that I went through that catharsis before they were born.
Oh, lucky them.
Yeah, but that's a difficult thing. So you are listening to KKCR, Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Kauai Soapbox with Felicia, Marshall, Preeta, and Annie. So, Preeta, do you have any other main things you would like to leave the listener with before we go to your song? Is there something you want them to be listening for?
It's just soak it up.
Okay.
And it's a single that I came out with 2 months ago, and the video is following. So it's available on iTunes under Preeta, or my website, preeta.com.
Okay. And so Felicia barely ever plays a video, so let's see if this worked. I thought it would come on.
You know they won't be able to see it.
It's okay. A CD. She meant to say CD.
Oh, okay.
Stained cheeks to the fire, woman. Let yourself be consumed by desire, woman. It is time to revel in your power, woman, woman. Heal thyself, a woman. Remember that you are the queen, woman. You are the holy grail, the Magdalene, woman. No need to search any longer, the priestess of wealth, woman. It is time to heal thyself. Times are a-changing, woman. It's this life that needs rearranging, woman. Let go of what no longer serves you, woman, woman. Heal thyself. Too that you are the queen. Woman, you are the holy grail, the Magdalene. Woman, no need to search any longer, the priestess of hell. Woman, it is time. Woman, has it been too long to remember that you are the queen? Woman, you are the holy grail, the Magdalene. Woman, no need to search any longer, the priestess of well. Woman, it is time to hear the sail. Hear the
That's really beautiful, Preeta.
Thank you.
Very nice.
Thanks.
So you're playing guitar on there?
Uh-huh.
And anything else?
On that one, no, just guitar.
Mm-hmm. Really nice work.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, and so people can come and connect with you this Thursday at 7:30?
7:30 to 9:30, yeah.
At the general store of Hanalei, which is the old Qingyang. The true Qingyang store.
Yes.
The classic one with Carlos is the one who has that great site there. It's like largely an art room, but it's a studio learning center.
Yeah.
Almost every night of the week, he's got somebody being amplified and sharing their gifts. And so it's really a very nice thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And most of the time, I think there's no cover for what's going on in there. It's like a community gift.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just want to thank you, Felicia, for being a role model to women on this island. So thank you for standing up and owning your power.
Well, thank you. I'm honored. I'm honored. And I'm glad that you're getting to meet Annie, who is another person who, you know, we get these amazing individuals. I joke and say Kauai is an inverse bell curve of normal people. We got all kinds of exceptional people. And Annie, you are one of them. She's smilingly shy here, but...
Thank you.
So... You really started life in Bolivia, right?
That's right. I'm from La Paz.
La Paz?
And I lived throughout Latin America. I arrived in the U.S. when I was about 13. And I've worked all over Latin America in my professional life and expanded to Africa, to Azerbaijan a couple of years ago.
And then I know you've been working in Haiti because mm-hmm. you fly there occasionally, so you've got something going on there.
Yeah, Haiti for me is one of my favorite places. I love the people. I love the culture. I think to me, being in a country and understanding the culture, understanding the people makes a real difference. Living here in Hawaii, it's interesting. I really feel that my Andean culture is got a lot of similarities to the Hawaiian culture.
And for people who don't know, the Andes are the big mountain range in the middle of South America.
That's right.
And Bolivia is up high at the top. It's landlocked. There's one of
Bolivia's landlocked.
And Paraguay is also.
That's right.
But every other country has got an ocean, correct?
Correct. Yes, unfortunately, we lost our ocean. We used to have one, but we lost it to a war with Peru.
Oh, I know.
So, yes, La Paz is about 13,500 feet up. It's got the highest airport, and that area is the Andean area where I'm from. The Aymara are the people who live around Lake Titicaca. But we also have the Amazon. So we have lowlands, and we have a lot of the fruits and plants that we have here on Kauai are also in Bolivia. So I've been really enjoying growing and eating some of the things that I used to eat when I was a little girl.
And your daughter and grandchildren are here. Were the girls born here?
Yes. My youngest daughter was born here on Kauai, and my oldest granddaughter in the Big Island.
Okay. So just kind of giving the listener a little bit also knowledge that you're here, too. Like, you have had a history of going around, and you're old enough to be a grandmother. So I'm curious, because my timeline might not be super strong, but you're old enough to remember the time of Pinochet and all those
very
big challenges that happened in South America.
Very much so, yes. That was probably the worst thing as a teenager growing up and seeing the fall of Pinochet. Because Pinochet, to me, represented somebody who really believed in... When Pinochet came in, he squashed a dream that we had with a revolution that was coming in a peaceful way.
And he was the leader of Uruguay?
Chile.
Mm-hmm. And then I'm forgetting who was Uruguay. There was a whole bunch of them that were in there, and they killed people.
I think you were probably remembering both Argentina and Brazil had dictatorships. South America went through a time when you had dictatorships. Now, you were talking earlier about the Native Americans, and one of the things that I'm happy about is that Bolivia right now has Evo Morales, who is Aymara, who is actually somebody who has allowed the indigenous people in Bolivia to feel very proud about being indigenous. When I was there, I had a conversation with somebody in the university, and they used to say, before, when I would ask who lived in a very indigenous part of the city, nobody would say they lived in El Alto. Now, when they ask, are there people who lived in El Alto, almost everybody will accept and be proud of being indigenous. And I think he's changed that. And I go back to your love for empowering women. And I think that it's really similar. We have similar issues with being women. I've worked with women all over the Americas, and women are the ones who nurture. When women make money, they spend it on their family. When a man makes money, it doesn't necessarily go to the education of the family, to the food of the family. But if a woman makes money, it goes to feed and educate their children. So there's research that shows that the more we invest in women, the better their families are, their children are, and their communities. And I think the same thing with underprivileged or indigenous people, that pride and that investment in education I've seen in my work really makes a difference in how they live and how they grow. But a lot of that has to do with the initial pride of loving yourself or knowing that you're perfect, like you said.
And in your lifetime then, I know Uruguay did have a really rough time when Argentina did too, because I have friends from there who just have these horrible stories, and I'm forgetting the name of the dictator that was...
Paraguay.
Uruguay.
Very much said as well.
In your lifetime, there's been a time of strength, a time of real hardship, and then rebounding strength. 150 years ago, in the time of rubber, South America was actually economically more significant than North America. And we don't really learn that in our history books, but South America actually, and I think it was Argentina, Venezuela, they were actually very, very strong at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And even Peru, right? Because they had all the rubber going on down there.
And Bolivia had a lot of the tin and a lot of the silver. all those had booms of different times. Yes.
And so your career, I know you, but I actually have never interviewed you very much ever. So I'm pulling these little bits and pieces, but we're going to take this somewhere. But why I think it's really important, your viewpoint on this isn't just what you went and did right now in Washington, D.C. for our Kauai Farmers Union United. I mean, we'll get to that, but I'm really trying to look at the larger context. I know that you work in the nonprofit world, and what's the name of your larger organization?
For 20 years, I worked for the Partners of the Americas, and there that's where I learned and lived and worked in Latin America. After that, I left and became a person with many hats. I'm the executive director of Partners for Sustainable Development.
That's, I think, the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah. I also have worked quite a bit with the International Center for Nonprofit Law. And what brings all of these organizations together in my life is it ties to the topic of what you were talking about. How do we work together? How do we make our world a world that responds to our needs and our freedoms? And I think we call it civil society in my professional life. But what is civil society? It's really all of us together, our communities, our community groups, and how we organize ourselves to come together to express our priorities and our needs, I think is what will protect us or will make it possible for us to be able to be a partner to government, be a partner and somebody with a voice to the private sector. And I think when civil society, when communities are weak, then there's an imbalance, and then we get poor policies, bad laws, and bad products, I think, as well.
And all kinds of social unrest.
That's right.
And you're listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, Felicia with Kauai Soapbox, and Annie Brooke is who you are hearing speaking with me right now. So Regenerations, which is an organization I'm on the board of, Regenerations Botanical Gardens, we are so lucky to have you as our treasurer, and also the Kauai Farmers Union, or Hawaii Farmers Union United, Kauai chapter, I like to say it the other way, is really lucky to have you on that board also. And you have a little small farm that you're just really beginning.
That's right. We just started Baum Farms, and it's in Wailua Homesteads. And it's really a dream come true. We've been doing farming work and agriculture work for many years. And this is an opportunity to put the permaculture, organic vision come into reality.
And where I'm really excited to be grabbing you into a lot of this discussion is when I look at the depth to which you are working with these other countries, and I'm happy to have you tell me just a little bit more about that, but I will say I'm also happy to see the size of the grants and the dollars that you're used to managing and working with. You know, I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but hey, you know what? You know how to handle multi-million dollar grants. And I think that that is something that I'm very excited about looking at, because here on our island of 70,000 people with, you know, 20,000 visitors or part-time residents, you know, on average per day, we have we don't have that many people. So what I watch is we've got so many people giving of themselves, sharing. We've really got a lot of excellent hearted programs, almost all of which are unfunded, you know, and they're just kind of scraping by to get little handouts here or there to buy some fencing material or, you know, some small little element. And it goes from the food through to the food pantries to, you know, creating seed, which is really, you know, the most core project of Regenerations, is making sure that we have island adapted seed. And I'm actually kind of expecting Paul Massey to be coming through here. who is with Regenerations, and I'll see if I can pull him up if he comes on. But we have a lot of projects that we're doing where we begin with, okay, what is the seed that is grown and started right here on Kauai that will regenerate here? A lot of times we don't really realize if we go to the grocery store and we buy some seeds that, you know, maybe what we're actually getting is something that was... Paul.
Hey, Felicia.
Hi. So you're going to need to turn your radio off because it's picking up in the background.
It's even through the headset.
Not too bad right now. So I'm talking about you. So your ears are burning, but now they're live and they're on here. We're talking about, you know, how, as a building block, to me, a building block of freedom is having a house, is having food, you know, being able to have enough water. You know, here we need power, transportation, but a big building block of, I like to say, we'll be fine if they cut the line to the rest of the world for shipping things is food and plants. And Paul, maybe you can speak for just a moment on what your role is with Regenerations, and if you could give us just a little brief summary of what you did this weekend on Molokai with, I believe, the Hawaii Public Seed Initiative, and a little bit of background about who they are and what you might have learned.
Absolutely, Felicia. Thank you so much. And first off, I want to say thank you so much for having me on the show. Thanks to KKCR and aloha to Annie as well.
Thank you, Paul. Great to hear your voice.
Thank you. So I am the, as you call me, the fearless leader, while I try to be fearless, of Regenerations. And we have really put our focus into making plant diversity available to people, introducing people to really valuable varieties of plants that can help them to feed themselves, to make their landscapes productive through our seed and plant exchanges, through storing and then distributing seeds at our seed bank, and then through educating ourselves as well as others about how to manage more complex food systems at the food forest up in Kalihiwai. We're really trying to incorporate all of the best practices from the ancient cultural wisdom of the native Hawaiians through to the modern advances, thanks to our collaborators at the University of Hawaii's College of Tropical Agriculture and other institutions that are forwarding the science of ecological farming or sustainable agriculture. There are many different ways to describe it. But yes, this past weekend, are you hearing me all right?
I'm hearing you fine, yes.
Great. So just this past weekend, I was over on the island of Molokai for the annual Hawaii Public Seed Initiative gathering. And this is a group that formed as the result of a statewide symposium held back in 2010. It is led, or rather formed by and carried through, all of the administrative details are covered by our collaborators at the Kohala Center, most notably Lynn Howe has really taken the helm. Certainly Nancy Redfeather got us well on our way. But then our collaborators at the College of Tropical Agriculture and myself representing Regenerations are the three core organizations that have continued this network. And the network has developed in beautifully over the past 5 years, starting out with people who had a general interest in seeds, but like many home gardeners, maybe not a lot of experience. And now I would say that the people who are coming together for these annual gatherings are skilled farmers or researchers at the college, people who have a lot of experience with plant breeding, and growing various types of crops to seed, whether they be our temperate vegetable crops or even perpetuating the traditional Polynesian crops that are perhaps ultimately better suited for our environment. But we are trying to crack the code on how to adapt the the temperate vegetable crops, which of course have the highest demand. It's what people are used to eating, and it's what people want to continue to be a foundation of what they are putting on their plate. How can we adapt these seeds to Hawaii's various climates? And a seed grown in another part of the world sometimes does well and sometimes doesn't. And if we are adapting our crops by growing them generation to generation here in Hawaii, we're going to be coming up with crops that are more resilient to the specific pest and disease pressure that we experience here in the Hawaiian Islands, which can be quite different from the mainland U.S. or other parts of the world where the seed may be coming from. So it's about self-empowerment, and it's about making the seeds available to everyone and then educating people how they can participate by growing perhaps some of the easier crops themselves in their backyard garden, but also to encourage commercial farmers to consider maybe transforming a portion of their commercial production into seed production.
And
the potential for...
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, we are going to be expecting a call to come in pretty soon that we can take while you're on the air from Sandy Kato Kluto from the Agribusiness Development Corporation. And so something that she's going to be announcing that is land that's coming up and available for growing. They've got 5-acre parcels for the miscellaneous farmer up at Koke'e area, and then also they're going to be opening a bunch up at Kalepa Ridge, basically in the Hanama'ulu area. And at Kilauea, we have the Ag Park coming open there, 75 acres, where there'll be 5-acre pieces. And I know that there are, when we look at getting our extraordinary residents that have maybe larger land holdings, some of them are sharing out land, like, for example, where we have our Regenerations Food Forest and Seed Garden, that's shared out land. So we're trying to work very hard to help Kauai become resilient by getting the land available, getting the seeds available, getting the training and the technology out there. But ultimately, it comes down to people wanting to farm. And I think, like as Walter Riddy said, you know, any sovereignty begins with food sovereignty. And until you actually can be standing on your own and not being so dependent on all these imports, it's really critical to work on that food element there.
Indeed it is. So I want to encourage people to have a look at the website for the Hawaii Public Seed Initiative. There's not an easy link, but if you go to your web browser and your favorite search engine and you search for Hawaii Public Seed Initiative, you will get a result that will lead you to the website. One of the collaborators we have there, Ilana Stout, who works at the, she works on the staff there. She has been co-developing a database where we can be entering information on specific crops, or to say specific varieties of crops, vegetable crops that we are having luck with. And then that is getting cross-referenced with a new analysis on coming up with new growing zones for Hawaii, because the USDA growing zones are too general when they're applied to Hawaii. So this is an effort that she did in collaboration with Jonathan Price to look at rainfall data. And there's some really interesting analysis of the Hawaiian Islands, and there are individual maps that can be viewed there at the Hawaii Public Seed Initiative website, where you can see what kind of rainfall we get. As we think about being more sustainable with our seed crops, a lot of these temperate adapted crops that we grow have a seed that needs to mature in its final stage of development in a dry location. And we can see that there are large swath areas of Kauai that get more rainfall. That's our condition up in Kalihiwai. Fortunately, in Molawa'a, where we have a lot of organic farming, it's a bit drier there. But as we look at the sustainability of Kauai, we need to think about these dry areas as places for seed production in the future. And I know a lot of the lands that the Agribusiness Development Corporation manages are on the leeward side of Kauai, which are currently being leased to the biotech companies. These are critical areas for seed sustainability for Kauai. And while it's nice that Kalepa Ridge and Kokee is becoming available in some to some extent, these are wetter areas. We really need to be looking at acquiring leases on the west side of the island, where not only is it drier, but the soil is inherently much more fertile. Of course, this was no mystery to the biotech companies when they first settled in the Hawaiian Islands. They picked the areas with the best fertility and the driest conditions for growing their seed crops. We need to be looking at getting some of these lands under organic seed production as well.
And there is an effort in that direction. And, you know, some of those places have been, first of all, they're not in all of the areas out there. And then they are, you know, pulling back some of what they have been planting. You know, they're in contraction. So
yeah,
there is an effort to be, you know, cleaning things up and changing things around. And in this show right now, I'm not harping on that community. I'm kind of looking at the and, you know, and how do we grow food? So we would be growing some food right there. Annie, you just came back from Washington, D.C., and you went to, tell us what you went to and what did you learn and what did you bring to Washington, D.C. to represent Hawaii, Nei, and Kauai?
Right. I went to the National Farmers Union fly-in. They do this every year. National Farmers Union is the part that we belong as, Hawaii Farmers Union. I'm the secretary for the state board.
Okay, thank you for that too.
Yeah. So as part of that, the president, Vincent Mina, and I went to Washington. We visited all our representatives and had a good conversation with Masahiro Ono. We met with...
Who's our senator.
And we were able to extend the voice of the small farmer to Congress. National Farmers Union, and therefore Hawaii Farmers Union, is the representative of not only small farmers, family farmers, but also regenerative agriculture. And
regenerative means that the farmer can start their own plants or animals again, so it's more natural farming methods.
More natural farmers methods. It really talks about regenerating the soil so the soil can have life after, during, and in a sustainable way. Some of the other farming methods can be considered that you're mining the soil. Regenerative agriculture really looks at ways in which we look at the soil as a living, place where that is full of life, and that we treat it in such a way that it will be productive, you know, in a sustainable way. So one of the interesting things is Hawaii's president, Vincent, is the chair of the RALF Committee for the National Farmers Union. RALF is Regenerative Agriculture Local Food. So we're really sending the message, and that's what we brought to our congressional people, that local food is important, food sovereignty is important, and in Kauai, especially, we really are looking at how to promote that local food. And some of the things that they're looking at are making a difference. For example, Senator Hirono asked if there are anything specific with the new food safety regulation.
The Food Safety Modernization
That's
Act
right.
is a problem. It makes nature a felon.
Right. So one of the things she asked us, and if anybody has very specific problems, to please give her those cases, because she right now is working with the Food and Drug Administration.
Okay, I'm going to give you one. I don't like that you can't have animals and plants in the same zone, you know, because if you have chickens underneath your lemon trees, It's good for the chickens. It's good for the lemon trees. Or I'm just making it up that it's a lemon tree. I mean, you don't want chickens right in the middle of your lettuce, but it's not going to work anyway because the chickens are going to eat the lettuce, not only poop on it. But, you know, when the droppings of the chicken really have to go through the entire tree to make it into the banana or the lemon or something like that that comes wrapped by nature with a peel on it, I have a problem that you can't do that.
That's right. I think that those laws that are being turned into regulations right now have a lot of challenges for the family farm. And right now, the good part about it is what we heard, because we also met with the Ag Committee in the congressional part, and we met with people who are working in those areas, and they're saying one of the good things about it is at least they're aware. They are very aware that this is representing a problem and a challenge, and they're trying to work through it. Earlier I said that part of my work has been, and my experience has been, that when we get together as an organized civil society, as groups, either in nonprofits or associations or any kind of group where we can collect and shine the light on issues like this, we get much better results.
So you got the sense that they care. They weren't just, you know, sitting there for whatever hour they had to sit there. Did it seem like there was genuine
Very
interest?
Very much so. Yeah, Tulsi Gabbard is actually going to be participating in the Hawaii Farmers Union Convention, which is going to be in Maui in November. So there was a very warm reception from their part. One of the things I like about National Farmers Union is that the policies that we promote and we advocate for come from the members, from their membership-born policies. Right now at the Hawaii state level, we're really promoting the mentoring in farms.
With like Go Farm and different...
Those kinds of things, because in many states, in Hawaii, the average age of our farmers is over 60. So how do we get new farmers interested? Part of that is, how do you make a living out of farming?
And I, you know, when I look around, like I look at who comes to the Kauai Farmers Union meetings, and the average age isn't 60, it's younger than that.
That's right.
And then when I went to, I was frankly quite impressed with the Kalalea Anahola farmers. Have you been to one of their meetings yet?
No, I haven't.
I was like, wow. You know, we were listening and talking about water. And, you know, these people that are the farmers and people in there, they help to build the tanks and the awais and the different pieces. And, you know, they're my eyes, one would say. They're pretty sharp about mm-hmm. what's going on with that. And when I looked around that room and, you know, I mean, the average age wasn't 20, but it was probably 40, you know. I mean, it was young enough to be working on new projects, and that's what I think I feel really encouraged by with both the Kanaka Mo'oli community and then some of the plantation descendant community. I am not interfacing with as many of that community that really wants to be farming.
Mm-hmm.
The people who are newer to the island seem to be people who are happy to farm. So, you know, we really do need to be supporting that. And for people who don't want to farm still yet, if food is grown here, you know, that is all a very good piece. Paul, who's on the phone here, Paul, I'm pulling you back in here. You're still there?
I sure am.
He and I are going to go to this Bioneers Festival in... Oops, I got the radio coming in, Paul. There now it's not. So we're going to go to Bioneers in California next month, and Bioneers, they do a lot of different brainstorming, think tanking. It's a place for people to cross-pollinate and hear different ideas on a whole range of topics, you know, agriculture included, certainly helping indigenous people be able to reclaim some of the culture, because typically the indigenous footprint on the land is lighter than whoever comes in from somewhere else. We don't even have to bring it down to ethnicity. It's just when there is a new population, they don't have the generational history that an old population, you know, a long-standing population has. So many different elements. I want to give a shout out to Larry Magnuson, who has been a part of KKCR and a supporter, and he's going with us as well, and he's a longtime attendee of Bioneers, but we're looking at if there are ways to have Kauai potentially be a resilient community when we look at, because they have a network of resilient communities where it's a place that more community training is intentional. And we have so many great nonprofits and, you know, grassroots organizations to be able to help. And, you know, honestly, bigger companies that are willing to partner up, maybe if sometimes it's a little bit hard to figure out how to ask them into it, but we got to work on it. We got to work on solving it. Paul, do you have any particular goals for Bioneers?
Well, I do, actually. We're fortunate enough to sync up this year. This is the 26th year of the conference, and just great timing that Larry made it possible for us to venture out there as a team. Yourself, myself, and Larry are going out, and there's a special focus on seeds this year. So it just seems these doors seem to open at the right time. So they've been doing a seed exchange at the conference, I gather, for some years, and once again, there's a seed exchange occurring. But there's also a post-conference seed intensive. We'll be able to hook up with people from Baker Creek Heirloom Seeds, where they have a seed bank in Petaluma. We're also going to be connecting with the woman behind the Richmond Seed Lending Library, also, Emigdio Bayonne, who is a very notable introducer of traditional crops from South America to the U.S., and as well our friends Astrid and Matt Hoffman, who started the Sustainable Seed Company in Northern California. So it's an opportunity perhaps to explore how growers here in Hawaii can begin to provide seeds to existing seed companies. We're going to be looking at that. We're going to be looking at ways that the Richmond Seed Lending Library has been very successful in getting the community involved in seed saving and sharing seeds on a regular basis. They've got a great model that we would like to learn from. And then just in general with Bioneers, it's all about inspiring people with innovative solutions to address, you know, our worst environmental and social problems. And I think that, like so many people think, Kauai is a microcosm of the macrocosm. We have, you know, the best of the best and the worst of the worst problems that we're facing here. And it's a place that is captivating. Thankfully to the good folks who made that film, Aina, that came out recently, it really captures a lot of the peril, but the promise that this beautiful land has to offer. And it just seems like really good timing to capture the interest of the larger community and see what kind of solutions that are being developed elsewhere could be brought home here to hopefully set us on an even firmer track toward the kind of lifestyle we want to perpetuate.
And something I want to be able to call attention to is that the team there seems to be very excited about working with us and helping us figure out, you know, what ways we can empower people here. And, you know, I continue to meet more people that live here who have moved here with really a heart for listening and learning, but maybe have the capacity to help us bring people that have really good solution sets that's worked with people without housing or maybe drug challenges and stuff in other communities, and we can bring it together to have, you know, some really good conversations.
That was Sandy Felicia. She can't.
They really focus on, I think, one of the themes you have for the show today, which is about partnering and recognizing that we're, as I had told you before the show, we're only as strong as the weakest link in the chain. And as we look at all of these partner organizations that are doing their part, we need to make sure that all of the organizations are on a steady track to be able to continue their work. I think that's that is a spirit and a practice that Bioneers has looked at. They're based in Santa Fe, New Mexico, although the conference occurs in San Rafael, California every year. And they've developed a pretty robust, what they call a restorative food systems program that's in the state of New Mexico. And I think that the way that many of us, I want to tip my hat to Glenn Hantz, former professor at Kauai Community College, who actually brought myself and Annie together through his program. He really was holding a vision for a long time about a restorative food system for Kauai, recognizing we have all the basic building blocks to make sure that everyone flourishes, but we need to take a whole systems approach.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they do at Bioneers. And I think that with the steps we've taken so far, they're going to see a community in Kauai that is resourceful in and of ourselves, but perhaps needs a little bit of support so that we can take it all the way.
And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox. I have Annie Brooke and Paul Massey of Regenerations on the show with me. Marshall's taking calls at 826-7771. I guess we did get a call from the Agribusiness Development Corporation, and they can't make it on the show today, right?
Right. Something came up,
but not for lack of caring, and I'm sure. And you know what? She's going to be at the next Kauai Farmers Union meeting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so they work hard, and I think that, you know, it makes a good segue for why it's worth it to do our very best to work together rather than fight really hard. And I know sometimes I take a lot of heat for saying that, but I think there's a lot of value in trying to meet everybody where they're at and see where we can take it that's the best that we can bring it to. I mean, I guess I'm being too vague, but I mean, we've been fighting really hard on our pesticide issue, and without setting down the concern or setting down that matters, it's still, you know, it's, you can bring people together and coax people to want to use less of what goes on. You know, that the market is demanding less, you know, and when they're losing market share all over the world, because we see country after country are banning these agricultural practices because it's just too hard on everything else around it. If you sterilize the soil of other forms of life, that can be catastrophic. But I know that, like with our ag park in Kilauea, that Yosh, he just went to a agricultural park conference that with the Office of Economic Development, with the mayor, and like looking at what's working at other places around the islands, and just knowing that not everybody is on a permaculture page, still they are doing agricultural parks and looking what works. And I think it's like, it's a thing of sharing, and hopefully that we each, you know,
right,
encourage each other to make a little bit of shift.
I've seen that work in many projects, many areas. One of the things that we used to call them was learning networks. And I think that once you link people who are doing innovative things with others and create a learning network, whether it's an ag park or whether it's a women's project,
they tend to reinvigorate each other, and it can become like a catalyst. One of the projects I used to work for was Farmer to Farmer, and really all we did was bring a specialized person to a farm or a cooperative and have them exchange knowledge. And those linkages can last forever, or they can last for a long time and really become catalysts of change. Sometimes it takes somebody else coming from elsewhere to tell you some things that maybe you already know or somebody else knows. But because it comes from the outside and they're looking at it with a new vision, you're being a catalyst that changes.
Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to be enthusiastic for that. Like, I see a whole lot of value. I get a little nervous that sometimes people here are overwhelmed with outside people giving input. So then they're like, oh, you know, I go away, you go do it wherever you're from. But like in your case, you have seen things from, you know, different areas of the world, Africa, South America, different projects and how they work. I know Paul has, you know, gone to these different conferences and events in England and Thailand and a number of other areas. We're going to do an acknowledgement of our underwriters really quick. And then I just want to speak when we come back a little bit of, you know, some of this farming possibility with and what is implied with the dispensaries and the medical marijuana, because there's, you know, that they want to take the ability for people to grow their own medicine away from them. So, like, okay, well, how do we deal with this, and what's the monopolistic way, and how do farmers get involved? But thank you for listening to KKCR.
KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, K224CQ, Anahola, K284AL, Haleiwa.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com or 639-3456.
KKCR's Wave Rider program will make a huge splash during our upcoming spring membership drive. For a donation of $150, a brief message about your business will surf the airwaves during every two-hour program throughout our 11-day fundraiser. The fall membership drive begins Monday, October 5th, and continues through Thursday, October 15th. Early sign-up guarantees the most airtime for your donated dollars. Wave Rider forms are available on kkcr.org or call 826-7774. Reserve your spot in the lineup today.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. So, hey, by the way, Sandy from the Agribusiness Development Corporation, she just texted me while we were offline there, and she wanted to tell people that they can text her. She's really happy to work with people on their visions of what they could grow. So she had a late flight, but her email is S, like Sandy, K, like kitten, A-T-O, K, like kitten, L-U, T like Thomas, K-E, that's like kitten Edward, at gmail.com. And so she can, you know, take info on lands that are available. And she's going to be at the Kauai Farmers Union United next. That's the second Wednesday. And tonight she's at, you know, the Kauai Growers. Kauai Grown is what the piece is that she's doing. Okay, so we have a caller. Oh, it might be Sandy. Hi. Okay, thank you so much.
I'm so sorry.
No worries.
I got off the plane, and I just want everybody to know that, you know, there, like you and I discussed, there is the feasibility of land being available. But there are, you know, you have to do the letter of interest. They have to do all of that. But they can still contact me at scottdeplutky@gmail.com, and then I can send them the information as to where to go to get that. But, you know, they need to start working on a business plan as to what they want to grow and how, where they're going to market it, because that is basically the important portion of when you apply for land on state ag land.
Yeah, you want to make sure that it's going to be effective.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I mean, this is not a trial and error thing. I mean, it's just like, you know, we will come out and actually when we come out, we want to see that you're actually doing agriculture at the present time, and to see what you're growing and how you're doing it, because we're not teaching, we're not going to be able to teach you how to do agriculture. You have, we just, there is land available for you to do further agriculture.
Okay, so if people are existing farmers,
yes,
then that is better, whereas the ag park in Kilauea,
it's
people
different.
Aren't existing, they start with a half acre,
right,
or they
right,
can
right.
show that they've learned it, then they move to the 5 acres.
Yes, definitely, definitely. And then, you know, I'm excited about your ag park. I mean, I worked really hard on with that with
Thank
others
you.
When I was on the planning commission.
Yes.
You know, that was a long time ago, and it's, to see it coming to the point where we can actually have farmers there, to me, it's very exciting, and I want to be out there and work hand in hand with everyone, so that, you know, if there are any needs that I can help them with, you know, that I can go out and see what I can do as well. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, okay, and then I will be at your next Kauai
Farmers Union
Farmers
United
meeting, and then so let me know the date and the time, and then, you know, if anybody wants further information, please do not hesitate to email me at skotoplutsky@gmail.com.
Okay, and it will be October 14th at 6 o'clock, and we start off with an all-Kauai-grown potluck. So thank you.
Oh, right. So I can bring a potluck?
You can bring something. You know, the thing is if you can't make it with food, just come anyway. But you bring something that is from Kauai.
Kauai-grown.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm good at that. Okay.
Yay.
Thank you. Thank you, Felicia. Thank you for having me on the air. And everyone, please, let's move forward and have more agriculture on Kauai, because sustainability and agriculture work hand in hand.
Yes. Okay.
So, thank you. Okay.
Thank
Bye.
You so much.
Bye.
So, Paul, before I kind of let you off the air, thank you for being on this long. I know it's – are you still there?
Still there.
I sure am.
Okay, so what, and you're going to have to turn the radio off too. It's picking up.
I know, it's gone.
So, what we are, one more issue that I wanted to just bring up on today's show, because Jimmy last Thursday did a really excellent piece about, the dispensaries. That's for medical marijuana, and I learned a lot, and I listened to it, like I said, a second time today, because what I was happy to hear is that it isn't a done deal, that there still is time to be adapting these rules and making changes. But what I did get out of it is the trade-off for allowing a dispensary, the goal was to stop the individual farming efforts of it, to stop the home gardener of their own medicinals. And so that was what they seemed to have a lot of concern about. I don't smoke pot, you know, I don't really have anything to do with that, but I'm uncomfortable with that choice of moving it away from the individual farmers. I think that it's really important for people to have their freedom to be able, if you can just grow something that's perfect for you, that's right, that's at small scale in your backyard, doesn't cost you any money, then I think that's good. Sometimes we get forced into the economic system, and there's a lot of complications with this plan where, you know, it's a monopoly that's there in, you know, probably going to be in Lihue, but you have to go in with cash, and it sounded like a really complicated situation of, you know, not letting the cash leave your hand and touch the shop clerk's hand.
Right, reverse ATMs, right?
Yeah, like a reverse ATM.
I can't see any prescription drug plan covering marijuana, right?
No.
So you've got this big cost, whereas now people are able to grow it just about free.
And they might be able to make their own adaptation for their own specific need. Paul, before I let you go, do you have any specific thoughts on that? And then I'll let you go.
Sure, absolutely. Well, it sounds like a really bad idea to me. I mean, it sounds like it's really making the practice of consuming cannabis maybe a little easier, but it's actually making the plant more illegal than it is already. And not to single out cannabis as more or less than any other seed-bearing crop, but making it illegal to grow, save seed from, and ultimately have a diversity of plants that are adapted to a specific location that are of high value to the local community for whatever purpose they are, is a really bad idea. It's a move in the wrong direction. We've been very lucky that over the past 5 to 10 years, organic seed companies have risen to meet the crisis of the fact that our food diversity went off a cliff about 100. In the past 100 years, we've lost, they say, 90% of all of the known varieties of our major food plants here in the Northern Hemisphere, let's say. So it just sounds like a bad precedent, and certainly people who have been developing these varieties here in Hawaii should continue to do so. I certainly feel better no matter what the crop is. If there are people in my community who are growing a plant generation after generation, developing it for its best qualities, I want those people to continue to be empowered to do so. So I hope that that particular provision of the new dispensary law can be eliminated. I think it's super important, not only for people who use cannabis as a medicine, but just as a precedent for plant diversity itself.
Well, thank you. And thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. And thank you to you and Marshall and to Annie. So appreciate the show. Looking forward to collaborating with you for many years to come.
Aloha, Paul.
Aloha, Paul. We'll see you on Thursday.
All right. Much love.
Yeah. So, and just for callers, it's 826-7771. So those are, I think that medicinal marijuana issue is a very challenged one. I know that the lawmakers who are creating the dispensaries, they've worked really, really hard to keep this, possibility alive. They're not trying to create problems. They're trying to create a solution for the recipients that need it, that can't get it. Sometimes somebody is really in very bad shape and they can't, make these specific elements. So the intention is good, and then the extension of it, when there's the trade-off that's required, can be unfortunate.
I see a lot of similarities with food security and safety laws, because the intention, nobody is against, having food be safer. But when you look at the policies that come, and then when you look at the rules that come, the implementation and what the challenges are in making it to be a good policy and a good regulation is very, very hard.
Yes, and so that one's really challenging. And then I just want to move over to this Native Hawaiian topic for a moment. So I'm going to see if I can play something that was, on my friend's Facebook page. This is one of these guys who has been up at the mountain since day one and been there almost, the entire time. Mm-hmm. And he's talking to his
I'm
friends.
I'm on break at work, and I'm making this video about Na'iapuni. Now, I'm not Hawaiian, but I've been here for a little bit, since for the last 18 years of my life. And when I got back here in 2005, it was Kauinoa. And then they changed the name to the Hawaiian Roll Commission, and then it became Kanai Olawalu, and now it's Naiopuni. That to me signals that something is wrong when they have to keep reintroducing this monster under different names. And the only reason I share my mana'o is because I love you. I love my Kanaka Maoli people. I think you're smart, strong, sexy, beautiful, and related to me. And I know that there are some people that have willfully chosen to participate in those endeavors, and damn, yo, I mean, I don't know what you have to tell yourself to make doing something like that okay, but it leaves me speechless. I guess that's what I have to say, you know. Yeah.
And this is.
I don't support federal recognition for you. I love you, and I know that the United States government is up to no good. They've never been up to any good when it comes to the rights of us indigenous people. You know, I'm African. I know these guys. They do not have your best interests at heart. Trust me. Love you.
Now, I have seen him on the mountain at just about every meeting, staying in the tent, the camp, all the way sort of to the bitter end of the sleeping at night. And, you know, what I'm hoping isn't happening is that there's some division amongst the Mauna Kea protectors. I know some are getting involved with this particular group and you know, feeling like it's a tough call because they're feeling like, okay, I need to run for office in there. I need to be a part of it because if we don't participate, then we're going to get slammed, right? So we're not in there. But and if there is somebody who is more ma'a or more the rightful person to be talking about this. I'm owning that I was not born and raised here, and I am not Kanaka Maoli, but as I look at this, I'm looking at right now at the U.S. Department of the Interior's, the Office of Native Hawaiian Relations, so they have procedures for reestablishing a government-to-government relationship with the Native Hawaiian community. I have another page up that is the rules of when and where, and these are government sites of what happens. And then I'm looking at what I have in the newspaper in front of me. So it seems very much like, you know, we are looking at, because I'm seeing the press releases from the statement from the Department of Interior and what they're doing. So it is very much creating something that is like a tribal community. And it, best I can tell, and I'm looking at people's sites like Williamson Chang, who I've had on here, and Leon Shu, these tend to be attorneys, though they work, they're law professors at UH, but they are very clearly on the sovereignty page. But it is their opinion that when people establish this group, that it will undermine the ability of the Hawaiian people to say they are an occupied nation. It is basically like a surrender, as best that I can tell. And so thought about not talking about it, but it seems like irresponsible to avoid it simply because I don't understand it very well. But at least I want to say the dates. So the end of September, it doesn't give us exactly a date, but that would be tomorrow is the end of September, is the last day for the list of qualified delegate candidates to be announced. October 15th is the voter certification by the Hawaiian Roll Commission closes. And best that I can see on there, if you don't enroll, you exclude your children, you know, if they're not yet born. I mean, if you have a child that's born that's old enough to enroll themselves, then that's a different story. November 1st is when the ballots will be sent to voters by, certified by the Roll Commission as of 10:15, and voting begins. November 30th, voting ends. The day after the election, day after voting ends, the election results will be announced. And then between February and April 2016, this says AHA held on Oahu over the course of 8 consecutive weeks. Now, in that same window is what I'm seeing on the Department of Interior of when they have their dates for their meetings. And I think that I couldn't quite tell, it looks like, because they don't give a location, that maybe it's an online, like people can watch live or something. And then at 2 months after the AHA concludes, or this AHA is like the meeting time, or it says, if delegates recommend a form of Hawaiian government, a ratification vote will be held among all certified Native Hawaiian voters. So an outcome of this might be to dissolve the Office of Hawaiian Affairs. There's a lot of possibilities that can happen. So people are in a leveraged position. If they don't join in, and maybe they don't have anything to say, because when you're looking at a tribal position, it does make sense that it's not just the people who live here in Hawaii. Maybe if somebody of Hawaiian ancestry is born and raised in California, they can still be in this Hawaiian Roll Commission and they can vote and participate in it. And for many of them, they might really have a truly American mindset that isn't going to be as sensitive to what people who are living here feel. Mm-hmm. So it seems like a big deal, and I don't want to be saying what somebody should do or not do, but I do say pay attention and find out. Do you have experience with this, Annie, in any other?
Not like that. I have experience in regaining language, regaining. In Bolivia, we helped get the indigenous law become recognized again by the traditional law, and help the two systems respect each other.
But that's not decolonization.
They call it decolonization. That's what the president called it. He was pushing not only the laws that used to be the indigenous laws to become recognized by the nation, but also the schools, the way that schools are done. When you look at what they're taught, they went against many of the traditional beliefs. It didn't allow the language to be the majority, so the whole curriculum was changed, and he called it decolonization because of that as well.
Okay. And I guess I don't know enough to know if that's wordsmithing or if that is
a true belief that colonization is not only a legal thing, but also
cultural.
And you have to be very aware of what that does. So if you look at it in terms of education, you look at it in terms of your laws, you're changing fundamental parts of your country.
But you still have a Western economic system.
Well, in many of the communities, you have a Western system at the high level, but there's a lot of barter. Some people are not linked to that economic system as much as they are in other places. So, yes, it's still very much a Western economic system, but we maintain communities where there's the old ways are also very strong.
And was tied up in that being allowed to practice traditional agricultural practices?
Actually, that's very promoted now. There's a resurgence of some of the, well, we've got quinoa here. Right. When I first came to this country, you know, quinoa wasn't around, and I love to see some of those things. I think right now we've seen the benefits of taking care of the water, mixing water, the care of water with fish as a way of enriching the soils. So many of those things are now being revalued, and they're coming back. And not just in Bolivia, but I think all across the world, there's a revalorization of the traditional agriculture methods.
And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia with Annie Brooke and Marshall, and we are open for phone calls, 826-7771. And we're looking at, you know, how do we create freedom and empowerment is really the core piece. And we've been discussing agricultural practices. It's interesting to see what other countries are going through and, you know, what they're doing. When you go to Haiti, can you give us a brief summary of what you're seeing there? We know that they were devastated in the earthquake and the tidal wave. And
And you still, you know, it's been, I think, a decade, is it already? You still see such remains of that. You see, I went to the Ministry of Education, and they're still working from temporary buildings. How those people work is incredible. I can't imagine the ability and the frustration of not being able to have space or a proper information system or the tools.
What's their mood like? Are they basically a happy people, or are they?
Oh, I love Haitians. I love the music and yes, their disposition. I think most of the world that are rich in tradition and culture will focus on what's good and what's there. But when you look at the youth in Latin America, you see youth that are going through a really rough time. We had a time when they're the majority, and we didn't give them the education and the opportunities, and you have a lot of violence. You can't walk in the same way in Honduras or in El Salvador the way you used to. And it's, I think, the lack of opportunity that was there, and a missed opportunity to support that.
Okay, and I think we have a caller. Aloha, thank you for holding. You're on the air. Hello? You're on the air.
Hello?
Hi.
Hey, hello. I've really been enjoying the conversation, and I'm very interested in the background that your guests have. It's really exciting to hear. I'm wondering if they could comment on the role that community radio can play in terms of building, broadening, supporting, and empowering the community through community airwaves, through community radio stations. What are some examples and things that KKCR might be able to do here? Maybe that we're doing a little bit of, but maybe that we could do more, because I think this is a tremendously rich conversation, and I'm happy to listen off the air. Thank you.
Well, I think it's a really important point. Community radio has done a lot of work in education, for example. I've seen education for young people who don't have the ability to study, being able to do that through community radio ways. But more importantly, in terms of the ability to let people know where to access resources, when there's issues, ability to voice the different points of view. I think Felicia does a wonderful job of representing different points of view. And in places where there's tension, community radio has played a very important role. In places where the government is too oppressive and people are afraid to be the voice themselves because of lack of fear of repercussions, community radio has been able to voice some of those things so that topics can be discussed. But here in Kauai, I think that bringing the topics of importance such as buy local food, at Christmas, don't give a gift, you know, that's bought from a chain store, but buy it locally. Just getting people aware of the choices they make, that to me, I've seen what it could do in other places, and I think here, especially, the show is doing it already.
Well, we work really hard, and even just like that last one where we'd say, hey, there's a date coming up.
Felicia, we had a caller who wanted to know the results of a Native Hawaiian election that already happened. Did we have an election just go by?
Well, you know what? I don't know the result of that. There was one, I think, yeah. I will... I can't text because it's a landline. If somebody's listening and that you did hear how the election went out, you know, please do call that in. Do we have a caller holding, too?
We do.
Okay. Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
Hey, I wanted to add to the conversation what you were talking about, like, indigenous cultures and, you know, kids, youth, and other countries having a really hard time. And I think that what has happened is, you know, big companies have gone into other countries, such as little companies, or people putting in dams to bring water to wherever their business opportunities might be. And they're destroying the culture that once existed. Like, for instance, men used to take boys hunting, and there would be a ritual at a certain age, you know, a coming-of-age type of thing. And they'd go hunting on their own, maybe with some other boys, you know, maybe it's at 16, their own age, and, you know, they'd be gone for like 3 days at a time. And, you know, we're just losing touch with really the Aina, and that is what feeds us and nurtures us and gives us so much. And we've just, in a lot of ways, the Western world is going so fast, it's not really honoring the mother, the planet, you know, the mother planet, mothership, whatever you might want to call her. And it's to be revered, you know, revered. And it's not. Our land isn't being revered. It's being fracked, and it's being, you know, drilled into. And, you know, all of that adds up to what we're seeing today with a disconnect with the human race, basically. Not feeling as connected as it should, you know, with the land. And being taught that money is the most important thing, when really small communities can really feed and thrive. You know, we shouldn't be shipping food all over the world, I don't think. We should be eating from our own gardens, you know. I mean, that's how we used to do it. And people used to be more nomadic in some places, like, they're called Native American Indians, but maybe that's the label that they were given by the people that came over from Europe. But anyway, your thoughts on that?
What I totally agree that some of those traditions that were very important in recognizing when a boy became a man or when a girl became a woman are very important and have been lost. And I think, going back to what makes us strong, or how can we work together to improve it or regain it, I think that you're starting to see nonprofits, local communities coming and regaining some of those, and the work that for example the Youth Conservation Corps that are not only in California, but I've worked and started a couple of those in Mexico, in Honduras, in El Salvador. The work that those do, when you give young people leadership opportunities, you allow them to mentor younger youth and give them a sense of purpose, linked to you know, working with the Aina, working with learning to conserve nature. Those young people really blossom, and you see the changes in their lives. And, you know, I started with John Chater, who was the director of that program many years ago, about 20 years ago. We started that program in Mexico. I just checked to see about a year ago to see what had happened, because, of course, funding for that ended many, many years ago. That program is still going, and it's led and it's going by the young people. So I think when you have an idea that represents a need and you give it to the people and give them the opportunity to lead it, I think you really can become a catalyst in a community and create change. We were talking about bringing in people and showing people how to do. The only time that works is when people are asking for that and when it really responds to a need that they prioritize. If you bring in somebody to give them something they don't need or in a way that doesn't respect them, that's not going to create any change.
Right. So it's a timing and a balancing act. It's pretty challenging. I know I get a lot of streams of input while I'm on the air here too, and I'm seeing something that is coming up. Ku Ching and some others, they're a long time court case on Hawaii Island about Pohaku Loa, which is the crater right next to Poliahu where the 30-meter telescope is. Mm. You know, the Pohaku Loa, that one, I get that one a lot easier. That's a testing zone, a bombing range. And so there is unexploded ordnances and all kinds of challenges. Well, today they had their day in court. And so it's just opening statements. But we're seeing that is being, it's coming up. And that's, it talks about this lava-covered property used by the military for 75 years, where the Department of Land and Natural Resources is responsible for over 1,000 leases, and they're not going to lapse. So, they don't pay anything. Mm-hmm. And one could say, well, it's just a bunch of lava, but the thing is that is the crater at the top of the aquifer.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so, you end up getting it in the water, and this area is larger than Koho'olawe, where they did successfully fight it. So that's something that we're going to see unfold this week. And what they're talking about is it's basically gone unmonitored. And so there's a lot of battles that are underway in terms of reclaiming, what people feel like should be for them. And then we could take the converse argument and say, okay, we're sending all these military people out into war, and we want them to know how to manage this equipment safely. Right. And but then we can argue, well, why are we at war? It just kind of sits there in spirals, but it's not the soldiers' fault.
That's right.
So
but there are soldiers doing really bad things. It's such a huge conversation, going from, mentoring youth to now, soldiers in other lands that are actually raping and pillaging communities, and it's not.
Well, I want to be careful in really saying that over the air is, maybe.
I was saying it's not all soldiers, but it has happened. And then there's a lot of ill feelings, and it's just war is such a, it's such an economic game for a few,
Right.
If somebody really makes a lot of money off of war, certain companies and people, and it's an evil. And, I just don't understand, with all the communication skills that we have, why we can't just work things out. And we shouldn't, I feel, my personal opinion is we shouldn't be in other countries unless we're invited in. It's just not working the way that things are going.
Well, in broad brushstrokes, I think it's easy to say war isn't nice,
No. Yeah. But anyway, thank you for the conversation. I'll listen to the rest off the air, and aloha to you both, and thank you for the great show.
Again. Aloha.
Aloha.
Rough to say we shouldn't be in any countries unless we're invited in. I mean, what do you do with a country that's being taken over by basically savages like ISIS, right? We Sometimes you got to do something.
I will own that I don't feel like I have enough expertise on it to really be putting a strong statement out.
Right. Well, I think that if you broaden it even more, right, at what point does the world need to do something to respond to anything that's going on that is destroying their own citizens? I mean, I think that's something I've struggled with, at which point we haven't come in, and at what points we have come in, and how do you decide that? I think it's a huge issue, because I think we do have a responsibility if we're seeing people totally being
destroyed.
You know, what did we do in Rwanda, for example, or what didn't we do in Rwanda when the when that happened? I was actually
genocide happened there. Yes,
I was in that hotel.
Oh my gosh!
I was in that hotel, Rwanda, and went to the to the different places where they have to remember that, and the images and the ideas of so many people who died in so few days, and the world didn't do anything. What could have we done? What should have we done? And there's other examples like that in history. It's hard to know what point we do and we don't.
Mm-hmm. I was just in the company of someone who had been very much in the center of one of these recent diplomatic challenges as, you know, war is impending and collapse happens. And, you know, it's easy to sit here and say what, we think we would do, being an armchair quarterback, and it's not so easy to say what is the right thing. So I hesitate, you know. I prefer, and I've been trying to get some different of my veteran friends to come in and talk, and then if you're listening to me, like when we were doing POI just last week, we had a really good conversation between somebody who's been in the recent wars and then a really sharp person who's a veteran of Vietnam. And I'm humbled when I listen to what people who are actually there have to say about it. And I know, okay, I don't know enough to really be framing it out. But for our last caller, I appreciate what she's saying. Mm-hmm. Very much appreciate that, is that, like, when we spend a lot of money and resources and it's not very clear who's right and who's wrong, or like when you're bringing up the example of ISIS, I think that we're all in agreement that that's horrific. But where I see a lot of different stories is like, whose responsibility is it for creating these mercenary forces, and, you know, who started it, you know?
Largely ours.
I've heard that said. Again, I wasn't there, so I don't know.
Yeah.
You
brought early in the show the example of Pinochet. And to me, one of my heroes was Salvador Allende in Chile.
Yes.
And Salvador Allende represented and believed in law, and he didn't defend himself, because he really believed that he needed to do it legally. But history has shown that in that case, you know, us as U.S. had a part to play in that overthrow. So at least,
and he was killed, right?
Allende, yes.
He was executed, right?
He died in the palace.
But we overthrew him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And on a very positive note, Jazz with John is coming up next. You know, so we're talking. It's hard to introduce you as we're talking about dictators being. Or not dictators. He was actually popularly elected.
He was democratically elected.
Democratically elected person who was very well loved by the people.
Mm-hmm.
And I know something similar happened in Ecuador. And, you know, really, I read a book called Shock Doctrine, which has by Naomi Klein. And it really focused on all that happened in South America during the time of the Chicago School of Economics.
There you go.
And I honestly couldn't finish the book. It was too horrible.
Yeah, too many. It's a rough history.
It's a rough history. Mm-hmm. And it seemed very, very well footnoted. And it was one of those that I thought, oh, this is so horrible. This can't be true. And I tried to as much as I could, research it and look through what is the footnotes. I don't think that there's any way that we could say that we didn't have a very self-serving action happening in that area.
We have a caller that wanted me to pass on that Salvador Allende committed suicide in his palace when the
military was about to get killed.
And what'd she say? He was a democratic socialist?
Yes.
I believe, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was elected. He was in his palace when the when Allende came in. I mean, when Pinochet came in, and it was very clear he was going to die. So whether it was a suicide or it killed is a matter of question.
His death resulted.
Yes.
Right. That might be convenient to say that he killed himself, but who knows, right? Or maybe somebody does know. I don't know that piece, or don't remember that piece, but I do remember that he was somebody very wanted, and then that passed. Bringing it to American politics, and I don't know what, I always want to drag John in here because he's so sharp, but he probably won't allow me to drag him into it. But the debate is coming up on October 13th, and I believe there will be some debate watching parties that will be happening. It'll be around 3 that afternoon. I'm going to be at a show, but it'll be interesting to watch that.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was saying early on, you know, there's a lot of things that I really love, honestly, what Elizabeth Warren has to say, and quite a bit of what Bernie Sanders says really resonates with me. But I recognize that it is creating really big government in terms of what Bernie's saying, right? Or bigger government. It seems like no matter whether we go left or go right, the government keeps getting larger, right? But I, you know, at a surface level, I think, you know, it's at least getting better in a better way. Bigger in a better way is the way it seems. But I really welcome anybody who wants to call in at 826-7771 and set me straight. You know, you might say, no, I don't see it that way at all.
At least I think some of the things that are interesting are that we support our values. So if we do support families, then we should support their education. If we support families, we should support women and men having time, family leave when the child is born. So we should fund at least our values.
Yeah, we should fund at least our values. I think like the former employer in me says, they're sick leave, they better really be sick, you know, not just, okay, I didn't take my sick leave, so I'm going to take
That's
it.
That's right.
We have another caller. Thank you so much for holding. You're on the air.
Hi, Felicia. This is Scott again.
Hi, Scott.
I have a comment about Syria, all the refugees. I think that, you know, with all the billions that they're doing to relocate and support and take care of all these people in all the countries and the overcrowding and the starvation and all the travel. I think we should take those billions of dollars that everybody has and they're throwing it at the problem, quiet, Domo, and go there and build cities. Give people work. We could go there to Syria, secure an area and build cities and let them stay in their own country.
I think didn't we do that in Iraq? Didn't we, it's sort of what we did.
Oh. Case in point, you got me there.
You know, we went over there. We sent all these contractors over there. We spent an incredible amount of money, and I don't think we solved the problem.
Yeah, you know who the contractor was?
Kellogg, Bruton, Reynolds?
Yeah, and Cheney. Anyway, it's just a thought that, you know, then they don't have to learn a language. They don't have to travel. They don't have to jeopardize their kids.
But the problem I see with that is that Bashar Assad is currently dropping barrel bombs on the cities that already exist.
Yeah, but Syria's a big country.
Right.
So we could go in there secure, you know, maybe 1,000 square miles and build a nice place. They don't have to be fancy houses, you know. But just a thought.
Okay. Thank you for that thought.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye. All right, we're almost time for the county council report. Marshall, you've been pretty quiet. Thank you for doing such a great job with the phones. Do you have any thoughts that you would like to share?
Well, I'm thinking about December 11th a little bit. What was it like last time the federal government shut down here? I was on the mainland at that point.
John, what was it like last time we had a federal government shutdown? I know that they had problems, you know, at the lighthouse in Kilauea.
All the critical people keep working. Yeah, and then the other thing is it cost the government about $20 billion when they shut down before, because everybody that gets laid off eventually gets paid. I've been there, done that. I worked for the government for 30-plus years.
You were like an air traffic controller or something?
No, I was an engineer, but I was considered essential, so I never actually got sent home. But the people that did all got paid, so it's, I think, one of the dumbest things any of the politicians could do. So anyway,
haven't been there.
Yeah, so we're on the edge of that again. I mean, they're leveraging for that, right?
Yeah, December 11th. Stay tuned.
Okay, we've got one last call. We'll take it really quickly, about a minute, and then, Annie, I'm going to let you have the last word, and then we'll hear the county council report as Jazz with John comes up. Aloha, thank you for calling.
Hey, aloha. Yeah, I didn't have much to contribute on this program, but that last comment about the barrel bonds, I beg to seriously, seriously really differ about Assad and the barrel bonds. That is a company line, and, yes. Totally, totally propaganda. There's no Assad, just like Saddam Hussein, they are the ones who protected the Christians in their country. They were totally secular, and the people are protected. Assad, Bashar Assad, the eye doctor, he's an eye doctor from, educated in London. He doesn't want GMOs in his country. And guess who's in charge of GMOs and the wars and the bankers? Anyway, I'll leave it at that. It's just barrel bonds on his people is propaganda. And yeah, I could go.
Thank you for your thoughts.
It's propaganda. No, he's not dropping barrel bonds on his people. I guarantee you that. Anyway, aloha.
Aloha. So for me, it's hard to tell what's happening from this little room here. Annie, final thought.
Final thought would be, if we go back to the topic of what do we do to empower, to change, what I would encourage everybody is to become engaged in what you really believe in and what you care about. Join your organizations. Be part of the things that you care about in such a way that you act, you support, you buy the things that will make this community strong, and you look to see within your culture, within your family, what are the things you love, and promote it and teach it to your children. I think the focus on girls, the focus on women, is super important to keep the communities healthy. So keep those organizations strong. I think support your community radios. They're very important in keeping the message on point, giving people a voice. So I think more of this is what we need in Kauai.
Well, thank you so much. And Preeta will be playing Thursday evening at 7:30 at the General Store of Hanalei.
Well, did you say good?
Yay. Okay. Jazz with John after the county council report. And this is kind of a short county council report.
There ain't no meeting.
Because there isn't a meeting. All right, so we're going to just hear that.
Aloha, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Here's a county council report for the week of September 28th. There will not be a council meeting this week. The next scheduled council meeting will be on October 7th. However, there will be an Affordable Housing Advisory Committee meeting on Friday, October 2nd, from 2 p.m. until 4 p.m. in the P.E. Building Conference Room A. That's at 444 Rice Street in Lihue. The agenda includes a review and approval of minutes of the August 27th meeting, a discussion on affordable dwelling unit proposal by Councilmember Mason Chalk, a discussion regarding Kauai's housing needs survey, that's Kauai Rental Market Affordable Rental Housing Study Update 2014, and an introduction of proposed amendments to Chapter 11 of the Kauai County Code as amended, and this is the housing law. Check the county's new website. It is very nice. Until next week, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Aloha. And you are listening to KKCR Honolulu, KAQA Kilauea. We're Kauai's community radio station, and stay tuned for Jazz with John coming up next. Jazz with John is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Kauai Coffee Company, Kamal Ukulele, and Tiki Aniki.
Kauai Coffee, 100% pure Hawaiian, single-origin, GMO-free coffee. Grown and roasted here on the Garden Island at retail locations island-wide on all the Hawaiian Islands and at our estate on Highway 540 between Kalaheo and Ali'ali, where walking tours and coffee tasting are also available. More information and ordering online at kauaicoffee.com.
Kamoa Ukulele Company, dedicated to building high-quality bell-tone instruments, built with one player at a time philosophy, from student models up to custom masterpieces. Kamoa Ukulele Company, a family-owned business, supports KKCR. 652-9999 or online at kamoaukulelecompany.com.
Announcing Saturday and Sunday brunch at Tiki Yaniki, 9:30 to 2:30. That's lunch, dinner, late night, and now brunch. Tiki Yaniki in the Princeville Center. Fine dining in a wild setting. 431-4242.
And a big mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio and Jazz with John. Got a great show for you tonight. Some brand new music. Know you're going to enjoy it.